I just wanted to say that I've got 45.
45 minutes? Oh, it shouldn't take that long. It should,
Okay, good. I don't even think I can speak for 45, but I just want to mention that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. I am joined by the son of icon Michael Landon. I'm pleased to welcome his son, Michael Landon Jr. How's it going, Michael?
Excellent, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Now, is there a special honor, I'm sure you would say, in being named after such a iconic figure that we all know and love?
Yeah, in a way, it's a bit of a mixed blessing, just because of expectations sometimes comes along with the name. So proud of my father, his work. So in that respect, very grateful, very
Now,
proud.
you said that Michael was not a Hollywood dad, which is I'm not sure if that's kind of rare or not, but some people that are in that business can't seem to turn the off switch on whenever it's time to not do that. But you always had a great admiration for your dad, and can you talk about what kind of dad he was when he wasn't working?
He was an amazing father. I was blessed. My siblings were blessed to have him as a father. And as you alluded to, he was not like the Hollywood crowd was not his thing, thankfully. And I just mean that it just gave us a bit more normalcy in our lives. So it wasn't my father didn't spend weekends going to parties and socializing. He was home being dad. He had an amazing sense of humor. We cracked up all the time. And he was very affectionate, hugs, kisses. The character of Charles Ingalls kind of epitomized kind of the aura, the sense of who my father was. Now we had some tough times too. It wasn't all rosy, my family went through divorce, which was extremely painful. But those growing up years were magical.
And there's not a mean thing anybody has to say about your dad either after working with him. I mean, how he was on screen was how he was off screen. Because I was just watching a video of Todd Bridges, and he made a guest appearance on Little House on the Prairie. And he said, your dad made him feel like as if he was one of his own sons.
Yeah, that was my father. I had the opportunity to work in the camera department when he was making Highway to Heaven, so I also got to experience firsthand what it was like to be one of the crew members. And the beauty of my father was that he treated everyone with respect. It didn't matter if you were the movie star, co-star, or the grip or electrician, or in my case, a second assistant or film loader. He treated everyone with respect. The only thing he demanded was that you work hard. And if you worked hard and did your job, man, it was the best set to work on.
I know, I'm jealous of everyone that got to work with him. It seemed like he was just a fun guy to be around.
Amazing.
I also know that when your dad had cancer, he made his final appearance on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, and you could tell Johnny was pretty sad about that because I think your dad was one of Johnny's favorite guests. I think he made the most appearances on the Tonight Show.
That I don't know, but he
Okay.
obviously made several appearances. They did love to ham it up. My father played several practical jokes on Johnny. And yeah, I mean, one of the things that my father didn't anticipate, though we know he was beloved, but what he didn't anticipate when he became ill was the outpouring of love. It was unbelievable from around the world, cards, flowers, letters. He kind of became a surrogate father for a lot of families, for a lot of people with broken come from that came from broken homes and what have you. So it was unbelievable.
And I think it's safe to say that we can label him America's father, that he was America's dad.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you mentioned that your parents were separated at a young age, and I'm kind of taking this a pretty interesting way of what I'm going to ask you. But
Sure.
Your dad was what was raised Jewish, and you were I know in that background, but then when you were 18, you had converted and accepted Jesus Christ as your savior. Now, was that a big shock to go from Judaism that your dad knew, or maybe you grew up into a completely different religion?
So we actually, my parents, I didn't grow up in church or synagogue. There was a general belief in God. Every once in a while, my grandparents would take me to church, but that was the only formal religious experience that I had growing up. It wasn't till the divorce, our family breaking down, and I felt very lost. Along with the rest of my family, my mother kept on trying to convince me to go to church because she started attending church and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. It was the last place on earth I wanted to go. I finally went just to appease her. And Michael, I can't remember exactly what the sermon was about, but I remember the pastor speaking to my heart, and then I gave my life to Jesus, because I was a pretty broken kid.
I know. Now, was that a surprise to your family that you did that?
Well, you alluded to my father growing up in a dysfunctional home. His father was Jewish, and his mother was Catholic. And there was a lot of tension in the household between those two faiths. There were some very mean things said by my grandmother to my dad that kind of stuck with him for sure. And so, yeah, there was some resistance when I came to Christ that my father shared with me. But that dissipated, thankfully our love for each other won out.
And going on a much lighter note, going back to something we were talking about, that if you watch, it seems like Bonanza or Little House on the Prairie, it seemed like family was pretty big to your father. He really placed a big emphasis on family, it seems like, because I know that's what those two shows were pretty much about.
Absolutely, especially Little House on the Prairie. It was obviously something he yearned for, which all of us yearn for. A loving family is what we all crave and need. And so, his work reflected that for sure. And especially it was deeper for him in some sense because he never had it growing up. And so, he truly, truly wanted to have a loving family, on screen and off.
Now, we had Dean Butler on the show here not too terribly long ago, but he was saying that Michael did something interesting, was that he had the set blown up on Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, he didn't want NBC to repurpose the set,
Oh,
so he
good thinking, yeah.
Yeah, so he wrote it into the finale to blow it up. Yeah, that's my dad.
Yeah, that's good thinking. I know that
Oh, I
Hollywood
agree.
cannot, that Hollywood d does not know how to leave things alone, it seems like. Always got to make some cheap remake of the original thing. But so you also have also left the Hollywood residence to move somewhere else. I know you're in Utah, is it?
No, I'm in Austin, Texas.
Or Austin, Texas, that's right. And so did you just want to get out of the Hollywood scene?
There were multiple factors why we decided to move. LA is kind of a tough place to grow up, and we had three children, and so that was part of our thinking. There were other factors, though, as well. And,
Do you ever?
I mean, LA, you can't beat the weather. So during those summer months in Texas, I try to get back to LA when I can.
Sure. Do some work out there. Ever do any film? I know you're a producer and a director yourself.
Yeah, I write, direct, and produce. I'm all over the place. You normally don't, I mean, you get your jobs in LA, but normally you're somewhere else. So my TV series, One Calls the Heart, is shot just outside of Vancouver. Before that, I was in Colorado. No, before that, I was in Georgia. Then I was in North Carolina. Then I was in Colorado. So, like I said, I mean, the job takes you somewhere else.
And I was going to say, you mentioned your TV show, Wind Calls the Heart. We absolutely love that. That's a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's on Hallmark, and it's yeah, we're just big fans of that. And it seemed like that was the perfect network for a show like that.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, it took me quite a while to get it set up, but I had some history with Hallmark. I had made a movie co co called Love Comes Softly with Katie Heigl, and it ended up being the highest rated movie of the history of the channel by 40%. And then when the sequel aired, that ended up being the highest rated. So there's about 10, I think 10 altogether in that series, which then gave me, or gave the network, I should say, a certain amount of confidence when I brought them When Calls the Heart.
Yeah. Yeah, you took, yeah, I was gonna say you had the highest ratings on that network ever.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's been doing okay.
So when you decided to go into the business, and I'll ask you this a two-part question here, Mike. And did your dad ever discourage you from getting into the business? Because Hollywood is a crazy, crazy business. And and number two, was there anything else that you wanted to do besides being a filmmaker?
Well, reflecting back, I should have been a doctor because it really is a very, very difficult business.
Yeah.
My father was supportive. He didn't want to hand me anything. Hence, I started off doing industrial videos. Went to AFI, American Film Institute, was a directing fellow there. Directing is what I've wanted to do since I was 15. And then I started off at the in the at the bottom of the camera department as a film loader. Worked on my father's series, as I had mentioned, Highway to Heaven. Did tons of features, other series work in the camera department, which is, it's a very physically demanding job at times. But I'm grateful. Spent summers in the editing room working as an apprentice editor. Was a steady cam operator. All these things aren't on my IMDb page, but it was all part of my upbringing. But he never discouraged.
Good. So I did go to your IMDb page, and you do have something out called the Dream King.
It's not out yet. We're in the
Or not out
process.
yet.
It's a documentary, and it's on race, reconciliation, and forgiveness. It's based on a true story about a black man, Will Ford, and a white man, Matt Lockett. They both have dreams, separate dreams. They don't know each other. They end up on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, which is where Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Had a Dream speech. Afterwards, so it was a function there. Afterwards, they met, became best friends for 10 years, and then Matt Lockett, the white man, discovers his ancestors own Will Ford's family on his ancestors' plantation.
Wow.
And so that's kind of the core of the setup of the story. But we really, I mean, there's still quite a bit of ugliness going on. And we want to hopefully, through this documentary, bring some healing to the issue of race and reconciliation and forgiveness.
Yeah, that still seems to be a big thing these days, even 60 years after the famous I Have a Dream speech. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you one other thing, Mike. What advice did your dad, if any, or maybe even you, have for any aspiring Hollywood wannabes, I guess might be the word to say?
Yeah, so it is a business of perseverance, of tenacity, of just failure is not an option kind of approach. You have to be willing to do whatever it is, starting at the bottom, taking on odd jobs, obviously studying the craft of those that you admire, banging on doors. I remember there was a gentleman who ran a network, and I became a stalker trying to track him down. I caught him just before he got in his limousine and really tried to convince him that I knew what I was doing and to please give me a break, because getting the break is what it's about. And that's the toughest part, is getting the break. And believe it or not, even with a famous father, getting a break is not an easy thing to do. And took me years and years to finally get a break. Yeah, it's man, you have to just stay at it, go at it, and be true to yourself. Like, you have to, if you're a writer, don't tell stories that you feel the audience wants to hear. Tell stories you want to hear, that you know you can tell. Like, work within your world, your craft, your creativity. Don't try to go out there and try to please others.
Now, do you remember the gentleman who you tracked down, that guy?
Yes, I do.
Can
Dude, I
you
can't
share his name with us?
stop. No.
All right.
It's a
Well,
personal story, but yeah, but that listen, and I'm not trying to undermine how blessed I was to, have the father I had and the position I had either. But it is it regardless. I mean, I've been at it for a while now, and it's still a struggle. There's just a very small percentage of people that really get to do what they want to do in this business. So the Pareto distribution is very much alive in our business. There's just that one, that small 1% or less 1% that
yeah, I
actually.
was gonna say, yeah, it's
Yeah.
only like 2% of the people who try it end up making it and persevere it out, and
Yes. Yeah. It is tough.
absolutely. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time, sir. It's a pleasure and an honor to get to meet you, and I've always wanted to talk to you about your dad. And I
Yeah.
grew up on Little House on the Prairie, and Bonanza ran on a constant basis on in my house too. So I've always wanted to meet you. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, you bet, Michael. And if I could just quickly plug, I have a book that just came out called Literary Chaos. It's for young adults, and it's a lot of fun. And so if you just have, if the audience is interested, just type in Literary Chaos into your Amazon search bar, and it'll pop up.
I'll definitely get a copy out to you to get signed.
Oh, absolutely. Would love to.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much for your time, Michael. God bless you, sir.
Blessings, Michael. Thank you, buddy.